George Braque in the Cubist Still Life, 1928 to 1945, is the first major U.S. museum exhibition dedicated to the artist in 16 years. The exhibition, which opens today in St. Louis, is co-organized by the Mildred Lane Kemper Art Museum at Washington University and the Phillips Collection in Washington, D.C. Joining us now, the exhibition's co-curator, that's Karen Butler of the Kemper, and Patricia Favero is an art conservator at the Phillips Collection. We welcome you both to Cityscape.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It was George Braque, along with Pablo Picasso, who actually invented cubism. Would that be the, is that the right word to use?
Absolutely. Braque and Picasso met sometime in about 1907, and they worked very closely together creating paintings. I think it's hard sometimes to know what cubism really is, and it was a real moment in the teens when Braque and Picasso collaborated together. They often didn't even sign their own paintings, and they looked at the history of illusionistic painting, and they took it apart. They took it apart into pieces and fragments. So often when you see a cubist painting, it's very disjunct and hard.
Yeah, I want to talk about that. Cubism is an avant-garde art movement that's considered, I guess, by some as the most influential movement of the 20th century, right, in regard to painting and sculpture?
Absolutely.
So you were trying to explain that a little bit, but so cubism is abstract art. How would you describe it then? How do we know cubism when we see it?
It's very abstract looking, but there are always objects within the painting. So a still life, objects on a table or a landscape. But they're broken into facets. So they look a little bit like maybe a diamond or geometric shapes.
To simplify it, if you can just think of anything that Picasso's done, that pretty much describes it there, doesn't it?
It's true. There was a moment of very intense experimentation, but Picasso and Braque maintained that style throughout their lives.
Patricia, the Phillips Collection is a museum in Washington, D.C., so I'm assuming that you have a vast collection of Braque work there?
We have a very good collection of Braque. We have, I think, 13 works. Duncan Phillips was really interested in Braque's work.
While George Braque is now recognized with Picasso as a pioneer in this movement, cubism, he really didn't get credit for that at first, did he?
I would say that he did, but we have forgotten that, as Picasso has overshadowed Braque. There's a famous quote. Braque said they were like two mountain climbers roped together. So that gives you a sense of how closely they worked. And I think both of them were quite successful early on. And then, you know, Picasso really is an incredible artist and very much has overshadowed Braque. So
right. Well, this is safe to say, isn't it? I mean, people in your position in the art world know who Braque is very well. But the average guy on the street wouldn't know that name, would he?
No. I mean, I doubt it. And that's one of the things we're trying to fix.
I'm curious, why is that, do you think? Why did Picasso become such a household name and maybe Braque not? Because their work was similar and of equal quality, I would assume.
Well, I think Braque was a very different kind of person. He wasn't as successful. Picasso had these wives and this amazing life. And Braque was married to the same woman his whole life. He was a very attractive, athletic man, but he kind of lived his life in Paris and didn't travel all over the world. So there's a way, I think, in which personality has influenced
that.
Be
the art of selling yourself, I
right?
Guess. And some people work harder at that than others,
right? But his works, I mean, they're very difficult works. So you have to take time and look at them and enter into them to understand them.
Can we talk about the man for a couple of moments? Mm-hmm. The artist, George Braque, he's born in 1882 and grew up near Paris. He didn't begin painting cubism until a little later, I think it was 1908, if that's the right year.
Right.
So what was he doing before that?
So he was trained actually as a decorative house painter.
His father was a house painter.
Right. But it's not a house painter in the way in which we might think of it today. They learned special techniques for painting the insides of homes. So they would make very elaborate marble interiors or wood-grained. And actually, Braque took these techniques to his collaboration with Picasso, and this was something that they shared and Picasso learned from Braque.
But he painted as an artist also before that.
He was trained, yes, he was trained at the École des Beaux-Arts. So he had these two, he had a more fine arts education, and then he had this artisanal training. And he was before being a cubist, so to speak, he was with the Fauve painters. And Matisse is very, Henri Matisse is perhaps the most well-known Fauve artist.
Impressionism?
So Impressionism is a little bit earlier, as late 19th century, mm-hmm. but Impressionism, Post-Impressionism, those are certainly moments that would have inspired Braque. Braque is famous for having looked at Cézanne, for example.
Well, so what's the story of Braque and Picasso together? Did they begin Cubism together? Did they do it individually and then join up? What's the backstory on that?
No, I think they really, in some ways, began together. It's a little bit ambiguous when, you know, one of them went to the other's studio, was inspired by their work. It just came together, started working very closely together. And they worked together until 1914 when Braque was drafted into the war and he went off and fought for the French. Picasso, of course, was Spanish, so he didn't fight in World War I.
Well, here's where the story gets interesting, because it's when Braque was in the military that he was actually wounded. I'm not sure how. Was he shot?
It was a bomb. It was in the trenches.
And did he have brain damage, or what was it?
Well, he probably had a concussion. He was trepanned, so they drilled a hole into his brain to relieve the pressure. So he was temporarily blinded and stopped painting for a few years and had to recover. And that really marked the end of his collaboration with Picasso.
Huh. So that's what this particular, or that's the time frame this particular exhibition focuses on, right? 1928 to 1945. So is the time after he was injured, the time after World War I?
Right. So he began to paint again in about 1917. So it's a span of about 10 years before our exhibition begins. And we're really looking at the years leading up to World War II, looking at the what it means to make painting in the turmoil and and danger of a world that's changing. And
what do we know about that? Did he write about it?
Well, it's very interesting. So he did write about it, but there's an interview in 1939 where an art historian asks him, what does it mean to paint at this moment? What does it mean to paint with the horrors of the day? And Braque's answer actually is that an artist makes art. He doesn't paint current affairs, he says. So Braque, in some ways, distances himself from those events, but he says they influence you and they affect you nonetheless.
That's Karen Butler. We're talking with Patricia Favera also about the George Braque and the Cubist Still Life exhibit, which runs through April 21st at the Kemper. Well, things began to pop up in his art, I guess, at this time. I saw some images of works with skulls. I'm just assuming that all related to his war experience.
So, well, this is a very interesting question. So, yes, we know, for example, that Braque was wounded in World War I. And then in World War, as World War II begins, those skulls emerge in about 1938-39. And there is actually a long tradition of painting skulls in art. They call them vanitas, or they're paintings that evoke the ephemerality of life. So it was certainly, of course, appropriate to call upon that tradition at that moment. So some of the paintings, they not only have skulls, they have rosary beads and crosses, but they're also placed on tables where you see palettes and brushes and the accoutrement of the studio. So it's they're very much about his own world, his studio and his painting.
And, so, and the scale of his work got smaller, didn't it?
It got more intimate and intricate. So the work, he paints small and large works at this time, but they're always works in which you have to kind of make sense of those spaces. So
okay, well, in addition to him being injured and all of that, at some point, explain this to me, was it a friend or an associate had committed suicide? And then I think he stopped painting again. Was it because of that, or?
Yes. So Braque's dealer was probably one of the most important art dealers of the 20th century, and his name was Paul Rosenberg. And Rosenberg was Jewish. and had a wonderful, luxurious gallery in the 8th arrondissement of Paris. And Braque was quite successful with Rosenberg. But as Paris fell to the Germans, Rosenberg had to flee. In fact, he fled to the States and opened a gallery in New York. But so that would be one thing. I mean, Braque's Jewish dealer had to leave. But he was also very close with an art historian named Karl Einstein, who was German and Jewish. And Einstein was a committed communist. He fought for the Spanish, on the side of the Spanish Republicans in the Spanish Civil War. And Einstein was trapped in France and committed suicide in 1914. So, yes, so a number of people very close to Braque, you know, had very sad events happen. And Braque himself, it was right in 1940, as Paris fell to the Germans, there was a moment of panic when many, many people were leaving Paris. So you do, Braque packs up his studio in Paris. He has a country home in Normandy. He packs that up, and he goes south, actually, to the family of his housekeeper and stays with them until the sort of turmoil ends, and then he eventually goes back to Paris, where he stays through the war.
Let's talk specifically about some of the paintings in this exhibit. Patricia, I think you said at the Phillips, did you say there were 16 there?
13.
13 there. Well, then this is a big exhibition then, because I think there are 42 in all at the Camp Brewer, and what's interesting is some of them are paired together. They're groupings, at least. Explain that.
As far as the Phillips contribution to this exhibition, we had four paintings that fell into the time period of the exhibition between 28 and 45. And the different groupings of the still lifes have to do with...
Well, with really cycles. I mean, Braque, we know that when Braque was painting, he would set up more than one painting on an easel in his studio. And he would often work from one to the other.
So they're not paired because they're like three of the same subject matters necessarily.
Well, they're often the same subject matter. Mm-hmm. The subject matter actually doesn't change a lot. It's often, pipes and newspapers.
So, yeah.
And yes, always a still life. But he would. So what we tried to do was collect these works that are very closely related to give the visitor to the exhibition the opportunity to understand how Braque worked. And Patty has done a lot of research on individual paintings to look at, say, the real process of the artist.
I know that some were used X-ray techniques to examine, I guess, the way they were made.
We used a number of techniques. I would like to stress that one of our most important techniques is just careful looking with, regular light under the microscope. And we also use ultraviolet light, infrared radiography.
Well, what do you want to say about his technique? And I don't know, maybe one of the two that means something to you.
I'll start with, we did the most in-depth research on the paintings of the Phillips collection because they were there. And I'd like to start with the round table painted in 1929. It's kind of a departure for Braque. It's actually marshaling in the 1930s. It's one of the first, as far as I know, where he uses this. Through the 20s, he used sand in his paintings. But in this picture, he mixes sand into the ground layer, the first layer of paint that's put onto the canvas, various sized pebbles of sand right into the paint and applies it almost, and it creates a surface that's almost like a fresco or a stucco wall. And it creates this just overall texture for the painting. Braque was really interested in creating a tactile space in addition to the visual space that, you know, you usually associate with a painting, and just trying to engage the viewer more with this technique. And that painting, in addition to having this sort of fresco-like surface, is also another one where he begins to introduce this bright, pure color. We found in our analysis that the particular pigments that he used, the colors that he used, those didn't really change that much. He just changed how he used them. So we found
What do you hear people say when they're looking at his work? How does it affect people?
Well, it's a really interesting question. In fact, as we've been installing the shows, the show at the Kemper, we've had couriers from all over the world bringing paintings in. And everyone responds very differently, but they're amazed by the beauty of these works. And the surfaces, I mean, I think that's one of the interesting things that Patty has noticed is within a single painting, you'll find varied surfaces. And Patty said Brock was very interested in creating tactile space, the sense that you can touch these objects. So you'll find wood grain, you'll find marble, you'll find wallpaper patterns.
As long as we don't touch them at the Kemper, right?
Yes.
Washington University's Mildred Lane Kemper Art Museum presents George Brock and the Cubist Still Life, 1928 to 1945, opening this evening, running through April 21st. In fact, there's a public reception between 7 and 9 this evening. If you'd like more information, go to stlpublicradio.org to the Cityscape page, and we'll have a link to everything that you need to know. George Brock died in 1963. Did he work to the end?
He did.
Mm-hmm.
He did.
Yeah.
Up until he had a hemorrhage in the brain and died and worked as long as he could.
I look forward to seeing this again. The exhibition runs through April the 21st. That's Karen Butler from Washington University's Mildred Lane Kemper Art Museum. Also here today, art conservator Patricia Favero from the Phillips Collection in Washington, D.C. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.